Hello and welcome to Beautiful Minds, an exploration into the minds of creative people and what makes them tick. This is a show brought to you by Audio Journal and sponsored by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. Opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. The goal of this program is to offer insight into the beautiful and creative minds of all types of artistic people right here in the New England area. I'm your host, Tom Hurley, and before we get started, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about myself. I've been a musician, singer-songwriter, and an artist since 1986, and in that time I've had the distinct pleasure of meeting so many truly talented people in this area. Musicians, artists, songwriters, beautiful minds that expand the entire creative spectrum. And so I thought it might be fun to sit down with some of these folks, some that I've known for many years, and others maybe I'm getting to know just like you. My guest today is Joe Demers. Joe may not be what some people might consider an artist or a creator, but I would have to disagree. You see, I've known Joe since the early 1980s. And in all of that time, he has proven to be a tremendous supporter of all things creative and artistic. Through his love of music, he cast aside the lucrative but often cutthroat corporate world and followed his dream to open a local business. You see, he is the owner of Joe's Albums, located in the beautiful and historic Mechanics Hall building, located in downtown Worcester. Recently, I caught up with Joe and had a chat about what it takes to give up the security of that 9-to-5 in order to pursue one's dreams and be successful. Let's jump right in.
Thanks a lot for coming and doing this with me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Joe Demers, you're a longtime friend, obviously, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your background.
All right. Joe Demers, lived in Worcester my whole life. Went to South High way back when. That's where Tom and I originally know each other from. Mm-hmm. Went to college at Nichols College to major in accounting, which I did. Graduated from that and started my corporate career in accounting and finance, always in manufacturing companies, controller, things like that. Did that for many years. Mm-hmm. And at one point decided to switch paths and go over to the operational side and became vice president of operations, supply chain, all different parts of the business. Mm-hmm. To, you know, do different things, get a little tired of just the finance, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Always kind of had eyes towards other things, though. I don't know that I was super happy and fulfilled in the corporate world, even though it was successful.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing continued to rise through organizations, but, you know, it wasn't what made me happy, I guess.
Yeah.
Certainly, especially in manufacturing and in some of the industries that I was in, where lots of ups and downs. So you're hiring people and then 6 months, a year later, letting them all go,
yeah,
moving things overseas, offshoring, doing all that sort of stuff, which, you know, isn't looked upon greatly. And when you're at the top and kind of, you know, needing to lead that effort, it's just...
When you say not looked upon greatly, you mean by the folks that you may have to...
The masses, I guess, yeah, would be a good way to put it. You know, yeah. Think about our environment at all times. You know, it's the... everything's looked at as corporate greed and things, mm-hmm, like that. And you know, oh, they moved things overseas to make it for less and that sort of thing. And, you know, people lost their jobs. And so that atmosphere that's always there,
yeah,
around that corporate activity, which ultimately is really driven by the consumer activity. But
yeah, sure. Well, so let me ask you a question, because, you know, we're going to get into where that led you. Mm-hmm. But when you were attending Nichols College, you're studying accounting and business and that sort of thing, and you're a very, very intelligent guy and you're a hard worker. I think that's pretty clear. But was there an expectation back then as a young man thinking, this is going to fulfill me, this is going to make me happy? Was that sort of what you thought in the beginning?
Yeah, I would say absolutely, right? I think, you know, we grew up and were teenagers in the 80s, which,
yep,
was, you know, a time of excess and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But we came from both of us, from very blue-collar, uh-huh, means. You know, my father worked on the floor in the factory. grandfather was a truck driver, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, the mindset at that time, think of like Family Ties and Alex Peaky.
Yep.
In those
that's,
types
that's
of things.
That's exactly
right?
what I think.
And,
of, yeah.
and so, you know, watching that, I'm like, hey, that's, you know, I'm not going to be the guy on the factory floor forever. And I'm going to, you know, I was for a while to pay for school and,
yeah.
you know, worked in the factories and things like that. But was striving to, you know, get to a better place. And I think, you know, especially when you're younger, you certainly, and to a large degree is true that, you know, the financial side of things, getting to that place where you're better off
yeah.
and maybe have some less concerns about paying the bills every week and every month is fulfilling and does get you to a better place. But, you know, after 10, 20 years of that,
yeah.
You know, and as you see that the rearview mirror of life has more in it than the windshield in front of you,
mm-hmm.
that you start to look and say, all right, well, that's great, and I am in a good place because of that, but I'm not enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know, and so look at the landscape and you know, do I ride this forever and mm-hmm. continue to be successful, you know, continue to build wealth and things like that,
yeah,
which is great.
Yeah, but of course.
To forego that to you know pursue things that you enjoy more or, mm-hmm. or make you happier and you know fulfill you
yeah.
more is a scary thing. That you know is when you're making that decision to move on from it. But I think you know as we get to different places in life, that whole thing changes.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you in that industry, in that field, before you made the change?
I guess I'd term that as, you know, my corporate career, mm-hmm. Because of the finance and operations and all that sort of stuff. Oh, boy. 92 until 2016, because that's when I left the corporate world 8 years ago.
Wow.
So almost 25 years.
Yeah, and you're the owner and proprietor of Joe's Albums on Main Street, which
yes.
is, where is it located?
Main Street in Worcester, if you're familiar with Mechanics Hall
mm-hmm.
building, same side of the street, block over from the Palladium, so right there. And a lot of people don't think of it, but there are four units in the ground level of Mechanics Hall
uh-huh.
that are commercial units, so we're right in there.
Sure, okay. And how long you been at that location?
That location... moved in 2016, so 8 years now. Before that, we were in Tatnik Square on Pleasant Street, way up Pleasant before going into Paxton.
And you sell vinyl records.
Yeah. Vinyl records, new, used, stereo equipment, and all the kind of things that go along with that, apparel, posters,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of your flashback to the old school record store that was, you know, all music related and kind of, you know.
Yeah, like, there was Strawberries back in
mm-hmm.
the day. And
yep.
I remember there was a place out on Route 9. What was that called?
I don't know. There was certainly albums on the used side in Worcester. You know,
mm-hmm.
they kind of moved around a bit. And there were other, I forget the names of some of them. I think there were one or two different ones in the Auburn Mall.
Yeah, there was a place on Grafton Street, Music Quest.
Music Quest, yes.
That was a pretty cool spot, too.
Mm.
But your store, because I've been there, and I hopefully a lot of people will visit it as well, but you sell very, what I would call, high-quality, high-end vinyl products. It's not to say that they're all expensive, but mm-hmm. you won't sell anything that's got scratches and you know, that sort of thing.
Correct. Yeah, that's kind of what we strive to be. Because personally, you know, I hadn't listened to records in, again, 20 plus years
mm-hmm.
probably. And like most people, when it was brought up, was like, nah, that didn't sound good. Because you remember clicks, pops, you know, scratches, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because your mind is just, okay, what stood out about records, you know, and that's kind of where you go. But then 2009-ish, when I was bored one winter and pulled my stuff out of the basement that has been, you know, just sitting in a corner.
Yeah.
Hooked it up and played it, and I was like, whoa, this sounds incredible. But I cannot stand any surface noise. So and everybody has different levels of, you know, what they'll accept for that. But clicks, pops from, you know, a scratch or something like that make me tense and go right through me. And so I, you know, impose that on the store.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we go through everything multiple times before it ever hits the floor. And so when people bring them in, we'll look at everyone under bright halogen lights bring out, you know, any imperfection.
Hmm.
As opposed to almost anything else, LED, sunlight, everything else.
Interesting, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, and so, you know, we have lamps all over the place for looking at things. And, you know, I consider a good collection a lot of times to be 50-50 between what we will dispose of and what will make it to the floor. Uh-huh. Obviously, at times you get ones that, you know, there was someone who even back in the 60s and 70s was, you know, super careful about everything.
Yeah.
But that's not the norm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people were partying, pulling it off, slapping it down,
sure,
and, you know, putting others on top of it and
yeah,
putting a beer on top of the record and everything. So they get, you know, kind of beat up, and those we really just pass on or get rid of. And there are certainly plenty that come in, and the whole collection is like that. You can't do anything with it.
Yeah.
Again, all stores are different. All people are different. Mm-hmm. So some people don't mind that as much, or, you know, they'll buy a dollar record and listen to it with noise. I can't stand that, but everyone's different. And so I think we're known for, and actually I was working out at our Northampton store the last 2 days, and I can't remember if it was Friday or yesterday, but one customer who came in, who's fairly regular out there, took the time as he was, you know, I was ringing him out to stop and say, you know, I just want to tell you that the way you clean the records and put them in new inner sleeves and put them in really makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It means a lot. He's like, you know, compared to other places. And I'm like, thank you so much. It's nice to hear that.
Yeah.
That it's recognized and appreciated. Because like I'm in at 6:30 in the morning cleaning records, you know, on this vacuum record cleaner and everything and making sure. And then if I have any question, we'll listen to it to see, okay, there's this little mark. Does it make noise or not?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So I think we are known for that. And again, not everyone has that appreciation for that. There are certainly people who appreciate spending an entire day in a tank of gas driving around to yard sales, flea markets,
sure,
other stores, and you know, getting some things for less money than, mm-hmm, than they think they would spend with us. But again, I think we're also known for being as fair as possible on pricing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's again, it's not full of dollar records and things like that.
Sure, yeah. So, it makes me think of a question regarding, so let's say the record itself, the vinyl record, is in really good condition. Do you ever have people come in, they want to sell you some records or that sort of thing, and the record sleeve is pretty banged up, but the record itself is in good condition? Is that something that you
absolutely
run into?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And vice versa. So sometimes, you know, you pick one up, and you're like, the cover's falling apart and,
mm-hmm,
and just trashed, and you're like, oh, this thing, you know, as you're sliding it out, has to be destroyed.
Right.
You look at it, it's pristine. And
yeah,
it's, how is that possible? And then, you know, the flip side of that is you'll get a record that the, you know, shrink wrap is still on. There's not a bend in it or mm-hmm, in the cover.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this, and it's a good record. And you're like, this is going to be great. It's perfect to slide out. And it looks like someone, you know, took sandpaper to it and scratched it all up. And so all the time with that sort of stuff. And again, some people want the covers and everything pristine also. And that's great if they are.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the way we run the stores is it's really about the music and it's about the listening experience. So if the covers are banged up, but the record's perfect and it's 40 years old, that's fine with me.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So we put that out like we would anything else. And you know, I do have, not many because I never have the time to look at it, but I have on a shelf somewhere some, you know, older pristine covers with those banged up records in it, so that if opposite comes in, a pristine record and a banged up cover, I might be able to put them together if it's the same pressing and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
Again, I've done, you know, a halfway decent job of putting together a shelf of those, but I almost never remember to go look and actually do that.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, I was wondering about that. I mean, from my own experience as a kid, because we had music all the time in my house, my dad had a huge collection of Irish folk music and country truck driver songs, like, you know, that sort of thing. But it wasn't unusual for me to take whatever record was laying around out and use it as a steering wheel, you know, make believe that I'm on the couch is my Lamborghini, that sort of thing. So I don't think those records would probably show up in your store. Yeah. So in regards to, you know, you had said that you were in the corporate world for a number of years, and obviously you earned a fair amount of money doing that, but it didn't fill you up with the kind of feelings internally that you really kind of needed. And it sounds like owning the record store and being around music all the time does that for you. Is that inaccurate?
Yeah, I would say yes. You know, nothing is ever that black and white, cut and dry and that sort of stuff. But certainly, you know, the income from it is also night and day. And the amount of time and work that I put in is, now I thought I worked a lot in the corporate career, and I did, but nothing compared to what I do now, which is, you know, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and then I usually do things from home on Sunday.
Yeah.
So the work that's put into it for the return is kind of lunacy compared to what I used to do.
Yeah.
But it is more gratifying.
Yeah.
You know, to build the entire business. And I have, you know, two locations, the website where we're getting orders from all over the country and world all the time. And we have mobile apps, you know, for the phones and tablets and everything. And sort of build that from the ground up and really, you know, be responsible for all of it is much more gratifying. And the relationships that are built, you know, when you're in the corporate world, obviously you have a lot of coworkers and people that you gravitate towards and things like that. But it's a little different with the business. You know, at times I say having the record store is a little bit like owning a bar without alcohol. Because people who come in are like-minded, right? They may not be into the same kind of music, but there's some similar, you know, some similarities there, in that they like a tangible product, they like the experience of coming in and flipping, and you know, some aren't very talkative and they just want to go about their way, but many want to stand there and talk, like sitting on the other side of the bar, and, you know, tell you what their experiences have been, what shows they've been to, but even what's going on in their life and that sort of stuff. And that's pretty cool. So, you know, you build some good friendships there too. So yeah, it's
yeah, that's an interesting analogy. I hadn't thought of it like that, but it's like a bar without alcohol. That's pretty cool. I hadn't thought of that, but you know, I've visited your store and everyone that comes in knows you. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, by the time they leave, they're going to have a conversation.
In like bar rooms, which you probably experienced too, we have our own core cast at each location that aren't even customers.
Yeah.
But like to come in and give you the download of their day.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That.
Well, you're right in
colorful
downtown
characters.
Worcester.
Yes. Yeah. And Northampton has just as many.
Yeah. So. Oh, that's great. So in your, you know, with the music background, like, what was your introduction to music as a child?
You know, I always was into music, and I don't know what the real catalyst for that was. You know, my parents, like most living rooms in the 70s, there was one of those old furniture type big wooden, you know, cabinets with the, no one can see my hands going up like I'm opening the top of this cabinet that the turntable was in.
It was a piece
of
furniture.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool.
Where you could stack up the records and everything. So we had one of those like everyone else, and, you know, they had whatever, the carpenters and some things similar to what your dad had and stuff like that. But you know, nothing, it wasn't like it was a staple in our household. Mm-hmm. But I always loved music and was struck by it. And so at a fairly young age, and I don't know how young I was, I don't recall. I wish I did, because in my mind, I'm like, yeah, 6, 7 years old when I got my first all-in-one that, you know, had the radio 8-track and turntable in it. But I also think I might have been a little older than that. It becomes blurred. But, you know, from an early age, just loved it. And, you know, I was on a different podcast and I mentioned this, and I got kind of, oh, that's going to be the first time he's been mentioned on this, is that I remember, as again, a young kid, and it might have been that young, because I also remember swinging on my swing set on a nice sunny day, singing Sunshine on My Shoulder by John Denver.
Oh, God.
Because John Denver's greatest hits at that time when I was that age, yeah. I loved, you know, yeah. And then certainly went through decades of, he's not cool, I'm not listening to that.
Right.
Now I listen to it again and I love it again. So it's, things go full circle. So, yeah. You know, things like that. And when I was young, loved that Ooga Chaka song.
Oh, yeah.
Blue Sweet,
yeah.
However you pronounce it. I just always loved music and you know, played things to death in my room. I had a... I haven't thought of this in years. You know, back again in the 70s to 80s, big headphones that you plug into that.
With the curly cord.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I even got like an extension for it so that, it, I don't know how far it went, but I could go almost anywhere. We grew up in the second floor in a two-decker in Worcester.
Yeah.
And it was so long that I could, you know, leave my room. I could go cook in the kitchen, go in the living room, go throughout the place with these big honking headphones on.
Oh, that's great.
So it really just went on from that. And, you know, and then I think, as you know, you gravitate towards and you become friends with like-minded people, especially at young ages. So, you know, most of my friends were into music, obviously the two of us, and that sort of thing. So, you know, that just reinforces it and it becomes a big part of your life. And then even in the corporate career, early adopter to iPod and things like that. Mm-hmm. But the people that I worked with or worked in my organization who were similar, you know, we would bring in boxes or bags of CDs and hand them off to each other that we'd burn and put on there. You know, so again, you just kind of carry that through your whole life of being gravitating towards people with that similar interest.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't really attribute it to anything. I think, you know, sometimes some of that stuff we're hardwired with,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I've heard, I don't hear it often, obviously, being in a record store, but, you know, before that in my life of people, you know, saying I don't like music, and like that makes me suspicious of stuff.
So it's funny that you bring that up. I was interviewing Roger LaValle from the Curtin Society. He's a record producer and he's a lifelong, you know, music head as well. And it came up in the conversation how we both and now you, we've encountered people who don't have music in their life. And I suppose suspicion is one thing that comes to mind. I felt just really badly for those people. Like, I think, like, that's really too bad that you don't have that part of your genome or whatever, you know. I'm not a scientist. that
it's almost like what moves you then, you know what I mean? Or it maybe, I don't know, maybe us music lovers are a little more emotional, even if you don't show it, or things like that. I don't know. You know what I mean? That could be complete BS.
No, I think you're onto something there. I do. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's an interesting thing. Here's a quick, you know, side story to this this note that we're on. This was back at the old location, so it was, you know, only being open for a couple of years, and there's one guy who came in.
Yeah.
Probably around Christmas time or something, because he was getting a gift, and he said, "Well, I just bought this little turntable, you know, for my wife, and so I want to get some records, but what records would you get for someone who doesn't like music?" And now, again, around the holidays, we get people come in with no idea, but just want, you know, input. Mm-hmm. We can usually help people, but when this guy said that, I was kind of like, I think you might want to reconsider your giving. I think we pulled out some Motown and things like that that I thought, you know, could appeal to a wide variety.
Yeah, sure.
Just interesting.
Yeah, that's a pretty odd question. Yeah. Wow. Oh, so you know what I wanted to touch on? Because, you know, you had a huge record collection, obviously, for a very long time. And you know, I've always known you to be a pretty meticulous person. You take care of the things that belong to you, that sort of thing. You had baseball cards for, do you still do that?
I haven't in a, you know, probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years purchased, but I do still have a ton. And it's actually funny that you asked that, because we haven't discussed this at all or anything, but back in the fall, I don't know what made me think of this, but you know, I have storage racks full of those, and my kids aren't interested in everything else, and my interest has certainly waned as I've gone into other things. So I was like, should I move these? Should I not, or whatever? So I just started, probably October, November-ish, adding some to the website, our record website. And it's not real apparent. It's not right in your face, but they're there. And then the holidays came, which just consumes, you know, all of my activity for the store and everything, yeah. Black Friday through the holidays and everything. So I haven't revisited it, but I think I got like, you know, 500 things on there, which in the last month, a rookie and a second year Brady card sold for significant money off of the website, which I was like, that's interesting, because I don't know how anyone's, you know, really finding it, that sort of thing. So so that's a really interesting question. But yeah, I still have it all, and I'm starting to put it on there.
Yeah.
As you know, I've certainly, obviously I had that collector mindset, right, with that sort of stuff. And then, you know, it kind of morphed into the records, although I don't view my records, of which I now have many thousands, as a collector thing. I think there are many people out there nowadays who are doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and getting color variants and things like that.
Sure.
That doesn't appeal to me on the record side. It's more what I want to listen to, what I enjoy. Now, I'll also say that, like everything else, they're either bands or things that I've become a completist on, and I want, you know, all the different pressings, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there is an aspect to it. But in general, I'm not amassing records just to collect, whereas the cards, obviously, that was what that is.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you know, moved into that. Now I guess my collecting part becomes more of, if you go into either of the stores, what's on the walls and what I have in the back. So there's lots of music memorabilia, from, you know, autographed things to Springsteen's boots and Elton John's jacket. And things like that on the walls, and gold records, platinum records, things like that. So I think my collecting side has gone a bit more over there, which is just advantageous because people bring the things in most of the time.
Yeah. So let me ask you, you mentioned Bruce Springsteen's boots. So do you have a pair of boots that were worn by Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah, they were his from the Born in the USA tour.
Wow.
And I got those. Now, those I did actively. There's three auction houses in the
U.S. Can I interrupt, though, and ask you, were those boots made in the USA?
He used to only wear Fry, and I think they are.
Yeah, Fry boots. Yeah,
so they are Fry from the 80s when he was on tour. So, yes, and it was, so perfect. But, yeah, there's three auction houses that they each kind of spring, summer, and then around the holidays have auctions of music memorabilia.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this was probably, I don't know, 09-ish, 10-ish, that there was a lot of his stuff on it. And what it was his tour manager from back then, who at the end of the tour, you know, I'm sure Bruce is like, you just keep it, I'm moving on, type of thing, had all the stuff and was selling it through these auctions. So I bought those back then. Other things like Elton John's jacket that he was wearing on tour, which is really cool because there's also an autographed program from that tour. And, and in the front cover is there a picture of him at a white piano wearing the same, whether it's that jacket or not. I don't know. I'm sure he had a bunch for the tour. But I got that only a few years ago from a guy who was the medic backstage at the Centrum in Worcester from the, you know, when it opened mid-80s-ish into the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was working with all the artists backstage, giving them their B12 shots or, you know, stitching up a finger or whatever they needed. He had come in originally to sell his records. And then we got to talking, and he mentioned that he had Prince's tambourine from the Purple Rain tour.
Wow.
And I was like, well, that's what I want. Yeah, I'll buy you records, but I want that stuff. And so he had the tambourine on eBay at the time. And I looked at it because, you know, after he left, I jumped right on there and searched and found it. And it was a little above what I would have paid. I think he had it for $1,500, and I was like, I'd pay $1,000 for it or whatever. It ended and didn't sell. And then I think I got in touch with him shortly after that. He called me for something else, and I brought that up. Or he came in with some other things, maybe found some more records. And I asked him about it, and he said, oh, I just sold it on eBay. He's like, yeah, actually, I got $1,000 for it. I said, I would have paid you for that. And his kind of expression just dropped.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, I have all this other stuff. I'm like, you know, bring it in. So he brought in so much stuff, you know, signed U2 record, Tom Petty record, Eagles things, you know, but that Elton John jacket, which is really cool, is kind of a centerpiece, and a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah.
And then I bought three binders of backstage passes from him from all of those shows, and even things at Great Woods in Boston, because he was doing it at all those places, and he was in that whole scene. And so when I bought those binders, I was like, these are really cool because there's so many, like every artist you can think of back.
Yeah.
But then flipping through, like there was a Daltrey one that was signed by Roger Daltrey. Coolest one was a Stevie Ray Vaughan one that was signed by Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Wow, yeah.
And I was like, these are great. But then they were in those old pages, like you would put photos, pictures of, you know, they were kind of tacky on the backside, and you put that over. So I was taking them out, and a lot just popped out, but others were a little stuck, so I took, like, a hair dryer just to, you know, get it loosened and popped them off. But then the best part was he took notes on a lot of things on the back of them, which, you know, nowadays with HIPAA laws, probably, you know, they got into the wrong hands. So it's great. I was like, this is the gold mine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the notes on those from, like, you know, Motley Crue shows from those days, if you could only imagine, and all different things are you know, pure gold. And so that was a whole nother thing. And even pics from people, you know, there's a Eric Clapton backstage pass signed note card and you know, an EC was here pic and all together in there. So just cool, cool stuff, a lot of which isn't even on the walls. But again, so we got here from collecting things.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, it's the best part of it.
Yeah. So are these things for sale or are these?
I have put quite a few, that Stevie Ray Vaughan autograph one. I didn't really want to sell, so I put a price on it that I figured, it's cool to have on the website.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll be there and people see it because I put up a memorabilia area where I was putting these and many other things that come through that might not be core to what I want to keep.
Yeah.
And that's in the UK now. So some promoter over there bought it off of the website and a few other things.
Wow.
So some are for sale, and I get that question all the time when people are in the store because they're, you know, some people come in and they're walking around and they're not even looking at records. They're just looking at the walls. And
yeah.
Like, this place is like a museum. Do you sell anything on it? And I say, it's probably about 50-50 up there.
Yeah.
About what I would part with and what I wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, they say everything's for sale at the right price.
And that's absolutely true. Yeah. And I do have a standing offer for quite a bit, a lot more than I paid for the Elton John jacket. But I think it looks good up there.
Well, that's fun. I'll have to... You know, I've come to visit you and I've seen the things hanging here and there, but I didn't realize that they were authentic items. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and one of the gold records that I have, which was for a Jefferson, I think, Starship, I don't think it was Airplane still, was actually issued to Paul Kantner, one of the founding members and guitarists and songwriters for Jefferson. Which, you know, usually you get them and it's some record executive or some radio person who it was issued to, but this was actually his.
Yeah.
And on the back of it, which obviously you can't see because it's hanging on the wall, he wrote Carry the Fire and signed it in big. I think it was he had given it to an auction. He's passed years ago, but for some, you know, charity or something like that.
Sure.
And so someone who was a huge fan bought it and that ended up walking into, the store up in Tatnik at the time.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, so on that topic of, you know, memorabilia, famous people, that sort of thing, have you had any quote-unquote brushes with greatness in the store, any artists, musicians, that sort of thing?
For sure. I guess, we'd have to define greatness, you know, especially with the Palladium next door and not as much, but sometimes the Mechanics Hall upstairs, people have come through, you know, members of groups like Saxon, you know, heavy metal because of the Palladium next door. A couple of the guys in the Goo Goo Dolls once because they were doing like the Christmas show upstairs for the XLO. And so, yeah, there's been a number of that. LA Guns, some others, and some that, when I haven't been in there. More locally, hip-hop artist who is, you know, pretty famous, but Joyner Lucas was from Worcester.
Sure.
And he used to come in all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, I've even been to his mother's house because he used to come in to buy T-shirts. And so, you know, one day I get a phone call from him on my cell phone, you know, can you bring tons of stuff to my mom's house because I have to do a video in New York City tomorrow and I want some new shirts and that sort of stuff. And he's a super good guy, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, but even then, because I work so much, I don't like to, you know, do things kind of afterwards, but I was like, begrudgingly, So I did, you know, so there's some of that. What I'd like to do more of is having some people in store who are in town, and maybe, you know, whether they're playing the Palladium or something like mm-hmm. that. But I never find the time to pursue it.
Yeah.
I need to do that more. And some others, like even, I don't know if you would have heard of this, Cedric Burnside is a blues mm-hmm. Guy, and his grandfather was R.L. Burnside, who was also a blues guy, obviously, you know, older.
Sure.
And he played Off the Rails, which is also right behind the store. Really, really nice venue. If you haven't been in there, I would estimate like 500 capacity that they built off of that building, nice inside. But he was playing there, and I wasn't in that day, but I get notifications on my phone like every sale, and I one popped up and I looked at it, and it was 3 R.L. Burnside records, and I was like, that's interesting, somebody's a fan. And then I looked at who bought it, and it was Cedric. And then I'm like, what's he doing in town? And saw that he was playing next door. I'm like, that's crazy, he just bought his grandfather's records. I wasn't there that day, but you know, so there's plenty of that happens, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. Lita Ford, I think you met her, didn't you?
I didn't meet her in person.
You've got her jumpsuit in the store.
Yeah, I do. That's another, it's a stage-worn suit that's signed on the back in a signed set list
next to it. She's a tiny little thing.
Yeah. It looks bigger because it's up on something and everything. But I had like a 20-minute Zoom call quite a while ago where we talked about things and that sort of stuff. And that's where you've probably, I think I used to have a post of that, like a screenshot from it on the, on our Facebook page for the store at one time. So so we, you know, certainly interacted, which was really cool. And the best part about that was when we started off, she didn't know I was from or in a record store, but the timing of it worked to where it was right after I had closed again in the old location. Mm-hmm. And so then we're on it. I was on the laptop and it came on. And she right away, she's in her house in Malibu, but I see her squint, look at the screen. She's like, are you in a record store? And I'm like, yeah. So then it like any, you know, reservations or, you know, things that she might have had immediately melted away because she was just talking about that sort of stuff. Right.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, oh, back when I was a little girl and growing up in England, I was a huge Davy Jones fan. I loved the Monkees. And I would sit there and just look at my album cover. You know, so that's kind of how we started off just talking. And this wasn't for anything. It was just us, you know, conversing. But it was just great. So it was like, you know, all guards were down. And then we were just having a good conversation because of being in the record store.
Yeah, that's great. It's interesting. I just watched an interview with Sting. There's a guy on YouTube, Rick Beato. Mm. I don't know if you've ever seen him. But
sure.
He's great. He's a true lover of music. He's a musician himself. I've always been a huge fan of the Police and Sting. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't like a fanboy. Like, I didn't really know anything about Sting necessarily, you know, and only recently kind of understood that he can be difficult to interview. Mm. But this interview, if you have a chance to go and listen to it or watch it, it's fantastic because he asks a question at the very beginning that just takes all of the guard down and Sting. It's a brilliant interview. Mm. I really highly recommend that you watch it.
Yeah, I'll have to.
Yeah. So what are you listening to these days?
That's a good question. It's really all over the map. I would say, you know, I listen to a lot of jazz, but my jazz appreciation is kind of finite, which is but huge at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the time period from say the mid 50s to mid 60s mm-hmm. bop period, where, you know, Miles Davis, all those types of guys, Blue Note, Riverside, mm-hmm. is just amazing. Like, it's amazing how much stuff was put out in that time period, whether it be, you know, trios, quartets, quintets type of thing. That's kind of what I like. The big band era, I can appreciate it, but I don't dig it.
Yeah.
And after that, when it gets a lot more either free or wagged, and they sound like they're all playing a different song, makes me tense. and lots of people tell me, oh, once you know, I took a class on it, and now I can appreciate it, and I can understand how it kind of, you know, this underlying thing. I'm like, I don't want to take a class to enjoy my music. So while that pool is incredibly deep from that 10-year period, that's kind of the period that I like.
Yeah.
So I start the mornings off with that a lot of times. Mm. And things. A lot of kind of neo-soul.
Yeah.
You know, for a few years, a group called Duran Jones and the Indications. It was my favorite group for a few years. Went to see them 3 years in a row, you know, smaller venues when they were coming through town. But just great stuff, you know, sold, I don't know, 30 or 40 of their first record just by having it on in the store. And people would come in like, oh, who's this? And they thought it was from the 60s, you know,
yeah,
but they're
okay,
younger
sure.
guys doing it. And there's a lot of that out there now that's, you know, it sounds like it's from the 60s. And so, you know, but it's fresh and new because it's younger people and they kind of their take on it. So I really like that stuff. There's a label from Loveland, Ohio called Coal Mine, C-O-L-E-M-I-N-E, which are two brothers, Terry and Bob Cole, C-O-L-E. So that's why it's called that, that they've done an incredible job of curating that type of stuff.
Hmm.
And they also have a record store, Plaid Room Records, there also, that they put out a ton of great stuff. They've branched out a little more now to where they have some stuff that might be a little more 70s-centric.
Uh-huh.
And even one that's like a yacht rock type thing, but it's new.
Yeah.
I like that sort of stuff, again, probably because of our age, right? It takes you back, but you haven't heard it 1,000 times, so it doesn't, you know, bore you. It's fresh. So a lot of that. But then there's so much good stuff in every genre. You know, a lot of people, and again, this is something I hear in the store a lot, when people maybe just walking by and are like, oh, this is interesting. I'll walk in, you know, but maybe they're not real into music, or even if they are. You know, if they're older, they're just like, oh, yeah, there's nothing good out there nowadays and everything, it all stinks. And I'm like, yeah, that's just what you're hearing in commercials and seeing, you know, the pop stuff. But that's probably always been the case. You know what I mean? That super poppy what everybody hears. But it's still good, right? It's catchy and everything.
Sure.
But there's so much good stuff. I'm also... And I think I resisted it for a long time because I sold a ton of his records but never really listened to him.
Yeah.
Chris Stapleton is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, from his country, but so soulful.
Right.
You know, there's something to him that it seems so genuine. So, you know, that sort of stuff is great. But I even, like, Taylor's Folklore and Evermore, Taylor Swift, are great records.
Oh, sure.
Evermore, I can listen to all the time.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, but then certainly... Huge Pink Floyd fan, that sort of stuff. So you always mix that in. But I, you know, attempt to try to keep it a little fresh and that sort of thing. And there's back to, you know, people coming in the store. A couple months ago, there's another one on that Coal Mine label, but she's more in the 70s-centric side. Kendra Morris, I think out of like Brooklyn or something like that. But I like her a lot in Spinner Records, and I had even had it on that day. And I got a call last year one time when she had one coming out from the guys at Coal Mine saying, you know, we're only making a few of these. So Terry, the owner, told us to call you because you've been a supporter of the label for so long and see if you wanted one. But it's like a big cardboard standout cutout of her.
Uh-huh.
And she, I don't know how to term it, but it's kind of goofy looking. and she has a certain look about her that you know, is not your mainstream, huge glasses and stuff. And so I just love it. It makes me laugh and stuff, but there's not a spot for it. We had it in Worcester for a while, but I'd moved it out to Northampton because there's just a big space for it.
Yeah.
And so a few months ago, probably around the holidays, sitting there, it's later in the day, so things are winding down and the door opens. And I'm like, how you doing? And I look up and she comes walking through. So I look at her and then I look over at the cutout and look back at her. So she looks that way and she's like, where did you get that? So I had her get up and take a picture of her with it and everything.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's great. So you have a very eclectic listening style, clearly. And you mentioned John Denver in the beginning, which you shouldn't be embarrassed. I certainly am not. I think that he was a brilliant musician. And
Denver and the Muppets is still one of my favorite Christmas
records. Yes, of course. But his that Sunshine on My Shoulder, I mean, that could possibly be one of, for me anyway, one of the most beautiful songs ever written. To think that he cared so deeply about someone to write that song, and it resonates with everybody. Mm. And, you know, that's a beautiful thing about good music, no matter what the genre is it's going to resonate with someone, you know?
Sure.
But as you were getting older and then I can't listen to John Denver. I'm a teenager. So, you know, for everyone that might be listening, what did you get into early on? I think I already know the answer, but you want to talk about
how early, teen years and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, teen years. Yeah.
You know, that's a good question too. You know, if I reflect a little bit, even that was super diverse. You know, I went through, I think, a lot of periods quickly, and or was still listening to many different things at the time. You know, we both share a great appreciation for The Who and, mm-hmm. and Pete Townsend and that sort of stuff. But, you know, during probably my middle teen years, or before that, I was an absolute Van Halen nut.
Yep.
Until David Lee Roth left and Hagar came, and then, you know, again,
ruined it.
Now I can listen to it and be like, oh, that's good for different reasons.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at that time, I took the poster off my wall. And and you know, that morphed into heavy metal. I'm still a huge Black Sabbath fan.
Yeah.
And Ozzy and everything, which I think, you know, most casual people who haven't listened to it don't really know that it's not thrash metal. It's not, you know what I mean?
It's classical
in the scheme
music,
of things,
honestly.
Yeah. In the scheme of things now, Tony Iommi's playing all of it together. There's even some beautiful instrumental tracks on those and everything.
Yeah.
But Iron Maiden, I've always been a big fan. So those kind of teen years, there was a lot of that, but I was still listening to Stevie Nicks' solo stuff and things like that. So it was pretty wide, but definitely that, you know, went through that metal. And on the heels of the metal went more into the Grateful Dead and going to those shows and everything, you know, and they were always around Worcester, Boston, Hartford back then, doing that Sullivan Stadium at the time, going to those. So, you know, lots of that stuff has huge impact, and I still listen to a lot. Nowadays, I listen to more Jerry Garcia Band than the Grateful Dead. If I put some on, their live stuff I appreciate more, I think. It's a little less jammy and just filled with, you know, a whole side of a record of space and things like that. And his cover tunes back then were great, like Shining Star and things like that, or, you know, really, really good stuff. But yeah, it's always been all over the map, I think. When you said you think you knew, what were you
thinking? Well, I do remember the Van Halen, and I definitely remember the Black Sabbath and the Iron Maiden. And, you know, when we first met, you're a few years younger than me, but I thought, you know, I liked you, but I'm like, this music is killing me, you know? And being a musician, you know, I mean, I had a lot of growing up to do myself, and I attribute so much of what you were listening to in the 90s when we were both adults,
great stuff.
We looked like we were adults.
And we thought we were.
But I remember hearing Toad the Wet Sprocket for the first time, you know, because of you and Natalie Merchant, the Beautiful South and bands like that. And I just was like, this is amazing stuff. I remember when Sheryl Crow first hit the scene. Again, it was through, you know, stopping over at your place, and you're like, have you heard this yet? You know, even Hootie and the Blowfish, which, you know, they get a bad rap, you know, but they were
that was
fun
great stuff for the time, yeah.
The Bare Naked Ladies, there's another band
I
that
I still love, yeah.
That, you know, people,
I wish they would get together, like the full band.
Yeah. I saw them a couple years ago, and I guess there was a parting of the ways and some of the
Stephen
members
Page.
And stuff. But, you know, people that don't dive deep into a band like that, oh, Millionaire, you know, they don't really understand just how really tremendously great bands like that were. And, you know, I guess I'm just more or less telling you how much I appreciate your insight. I think your view of the music world was broader than my own.
Interesting.
Thank you. As a musician.
That's important, you know, to me.
It helped me a great deal to become a better musician. It really did.
No, that's wonderful to hear.
So thank you for that. Yeah, I'm getting all verklempt. it's really cool. So where I know you said Main Street Mechanics Hall, but give me the exact address on Main Street. People can come find
317 Main Street.
317 Main Street in Worcester, Mass. And what are your store hours? Are you open 7 days a week?
7 days a week, 10 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
The website's always open, and the mobile apping, you can order there and choose pick up in store.
Okay.
So
and
we encourage people sitting around at home, maybe after having a couple drinks, to shop.
I just bought a $1,500 guitar from Japan the other night. It was about 11 p.m. and I don't drink anymore. I found a gold top Pete Townsend Schecter from 19. It's the legit. I've been looking for this guitar for 20 years.
Wow.
So, pretty excited.
Yeah.
Hopefully I didn't get scammed.
Yeah, hopefully not.
So you said something about a mobile app. How does someone go about getting get a hold of that thing?
Either the is it Google Play or Apple Play Store. So both the Apple and Google, you know, for your Apple devices and for your what are the Google ones? Samsung or something?
Yeah. Android.
That's it. Yeah. You know, just go to theirs. Or, you know, if you would go on our website, there's a banner up at the top that shows that you click on that. And then you could click to either the Google or Apple ones to download.
Okay. But is it you in the search and you type in just Joe's albums? And then you'll find an app that's specific just to you?
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. And the website, what? How do you find that?
joesalbums.com. So just all one word, joesalbums.com. And, you know, it's got everything on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's all one system because sometimes we'll get calls from people saying, oh, it says you have it in stock, but I wanted to check if you do because there's most small stores throughout the country don't have or manage their own site. So either they're just selling on eBay or Discogs or things like that. Or there's one organization called Broadtime, which does a great job. So you go to 100 different, you know, small record stores online and notice that they all kind of feel similar, even though, you know, the branding is different and things like that for their local one. And it's all new stuff. And the reason for that is they don't have any of it. So it's just a different front end, but the back end's this one thing that goes right to the distributor who drop ships and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll get calls to say, do you really have this? But everything that we have on hand. We maintain everything, the website, the apps, everything between just the few of us that work in the store and that sort of stuff. But you have to nowadays. You need to cover all bases. One, you know, because we have regular customers all throughout the country who have, you know, grown very comfortable with our quality and that sort of stuff, so they don't think twice about ordering from us and check every Friday when our new arrivals go out. But also, you know, people right here who are at work on a Friday, but they can't get to the store and they don't want to miss out on it, on the new stuff that's in, so they'll jump online or the mobile app and they'll just go to the new arrivals for that week, scroll through, I want that before it gets away, order it, choose pickup, and, you know, you got to do everything you can in the environment, because retail, you know, you look around, there's less and less of it because of the reasons that it's more convenient and easier for people to shop at home. So if you're not adding that avenue, you know, you're really missing out.
Yeah. You were in the corporate world. You did well. It didn't kill you, but it wasn't filling you up inside. So you decided to do this. And it's been said, people say that if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And it seems like you love what you do, but it also sounds like you work pretty hard every day.
Yeah. The first thing that, and that's true, right? If you truly love it, you know, and I think there are instances of that it just doesn't seem like work. But as you were saying that, my head shot through, that's BS. Because at least in my, experience in what we're doing at the store is it's a ton of work, right? Yeah. And anyone who thinks, oh, I'm going to do this and it's fun, And that sort of thing. Well, that's why you see places come and go all the time, whether it be restaurants or other stores or all different businesses.
Yeah.
Because it's hard, right? Mm-hmm. You got to put in a ton of hours and you have to be innovative and do all these different things and make sure everything's covered and offer quality stuff at reasonable prices, because everybody can be walking through the store, checking Amazon to see if the prices are in line and that sort of stuff. So it takes a lot of work. You know, and I think, again, a lot of people think, oh, are you hiring? It'd be great to hang around and listen to records all day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. Oh, yeah, you can, you know, shoot me an email. Because one of the guys that works for me now, who works on music stuff and everything, but his parents also own a diner and he works there. And that's a tough business, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, after working for a month at the store, I think he had a conversation with his parents where he said, It's harder in working, doing more there, you know, throughout the day, like the day goes by like that.
Yeah.
Because the amount, we're just nonstop. You're constantly on tasks and doing different things. So it is a lot of work. But that being said, you know, I do enjoy it. Now, there are days that I don't, just like everything else,
of course,
right? Nothing is all sunshine.
If you had to choose between the corporate world and this, you would choose Joe's
yeah,
album.
Yeah, yeah, and time, it, absolutely. You know, and are there days where I'm like, what did I do? You know what I mean? I could have retired by now if I'd stayed in the corporate world, where that's, you know, not close to the case here. But that's not all that life is about, for sure. If there's one thing to, you know, pass on to people, as far as at least my opinion and experience, and then you'll hear from others too, is that, you know, just chasing the dollar isn't what it's all about. It'll leave you unfulfilled, and, you know, you may have more things and that sort of stuff, but it's always a chase.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, other things that are more meaningful.
Yeah. Well, Joe, this has been awesome. We've known each other forever, but I learned a lot today.
Excellent.
So I appreciate you you joining me to do this, and I hope everyone that may listen to this will go down to Joe's albums in Worcester on Main Street.
That would be
great. Grace Hall.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Love to have you.
You're always welcome, and you're there most of the time, so they can go in and...
Yeah, I'm not always out front, but whoever is, you know, be helpful and you know, take care of whatever you want. But yes, most days I'm always there Monday through Thursday. You know, for the last year, I'm out in Northampton on Friday and Saturday. Mm-hmm. And Sunday I try to avoid it, but that's not always always the case. But yeah.
All right.
Come on down. And thank you very much.
The pleasure was all mine, really. So thanks again.
Absolutely.
And that's a wrap. Oh no, it didn't record.
You've been listening to Beautiful Minds, an exploration into the minds of creative people and what makes them tick. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Please remember that we would love to hear from you. Are there any local musicians or artists that you'd like to hear? Call us or email us with any suggestions or general feedback. Please call 508-797-1117 or email us at info@audiojournal.org. And I'd like to leave you with this. I'm grateful for the universe and for whatever put me here, and for all of the gifts that it's given me, but mostly I'm grateful for you being here with me today. I'm Tom Hurley. Thanks for listening. And have a great day.
Listen to Audio Journal on your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or, hey Google, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn.
This is Bird Note. It's late winter, and cranes are calling loudly to one another. 15 species of cranes are spread across the world, everywhere but Antarctica and South America. Soon, they'll start their spring migration, but for now, they gather in large groups, foraging and resting together by the thousands. Here are a few of those voices from across the globe. In North America, the sandhill crane. Saurus cranes reside year-round in India, Southeast Asia, and Australia. The common crane winters in Africa, Southern Europe, and Asia. Demoiselle cranes winter from Africa to India and Mongolia. Most of the world's hooded cranes winter at one reserve on Japan's southern island of Kyushu, calling together around sunset. Few birds' voices can evoke the spirit of the wild like the voices of cranes. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Today's show, brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
Would you like to hear news from Blackstone Valley and Webster that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Thursday at 5 p.m.